Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here. Getaway Friday, Friday, December 4th, 2020. First Friday in the month of December, 19 minutes past the hour. Taylor Myers is the guest this morning, working on a school project. Interesting class. We'll have her describe that again here before we go into hour number two. But I do want to thank our listener out there, listeners, John and Carolyn Heimlich, for sending us a Christmas card. And remember, you can send us a Christmas card too. WWGH Radio, 165 West Center Street, Suite 208. Of course, that's Marion, Ohio, 43302. If you provide a return address, we will send you a Christmas card back, and we will display your Christmas card through New Year's Day. All right. Now we turn back to Taylor here. The first hour was about the pandemic. Before we get into hour number two here, Taylor, tell us about the class you're in and what this project is for.
This class is actually two classes. I'm in two tracks of the same class. It's called How to Change the World, and it's basically just exploring a bunch of problems and like current things going on in the world, and basically trying to dig deep enough into them to maybe figure out ways that we can potentially change the world for the better.
Now, in hour number one, if you're just tuning in, we did the pandemic of 2020. And this hour, we're going into more, I would say, socially relevant issues. Nothing that's going to kill you, I don't think.
Hopefully it won't kill you.
All right. So now how many topics do we have? Because you're going to stay a little bit into the 10 o'clock hour. Mm-hmm. So what topics do we still have to hit here?
So I have planned, I wanted to talk a little bit about political activism, which will lead into like protesting and like how powerful and effective protesting is.
Let's go there.
All right. So first, what I wanted to talk about mainly with political activism, especially since like it's so relevant right now, I want to talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And she obviously passed away not that long ago, but she was the second woman as a Supreme Court justice, and she was appointed in 1993. And basically, she was a really big inspiration for women and like it just minorities in general, like all over America, because she really fought for equal rights for everybody. And I wanted to just touch base a little bit on like some of her like more important like cases. So there's a couple, United States versus Virginia, which is a case that challenged a policy by the Virginia Military Institute that kind of prohibited women from joining and being admitted to the institution. And her outcome from this case was women started going and being admitted to the institution. And I watched a documentary that really went into more detail with everything that I'm talking about right now. And I remember watching the documentary and seeing that, like, the first women that were admitted after this case, obviously not much really had changed other than the fact that they were able to be admitted. Like, they were still discriminated against, and people didn't really agree that they were there still. But that was in 1996, and things have changed a lot. Now women are a lot more, what's the word? Accepted into things that were before mostly just men. especially things like that. And I wanted to also talk about another case in 2015 where it was a bunch of LGBTQ Americans suing their states for not letting them be able to be married, which was one of the major things. I remember this when I was 14 in 2015, and I remember I didn't know much about LGBTQ then, but I remember how much of an impact this case had on, like, everyone in America, because everyone was celebrating. It was, like, a big thing for the LGBTQ community, because it kind of, it felt to them like they didn't really have to hide anymore. They were accepted, and they could have the same rights as someone who was attracted to the same sex, really. And that case kind of moves into, like, the protests, because one of the protests I want to talk about is Stonewall, which happened in 1969. But before I start talking about protests, I want your opinion on protesting. Like, do you think protest works?
In general?
Yeah.
Well, I would say yes, because it doesn't always work. Some things do not change anything. But I have noticed that, much like, especially this past summer, when we had the protests after the death of
George Floyd,
late in May, I guess it was, that all of a sudden people were charged that I don't think would have been charged. And they will have their day in court now, I guess. So I guess that did hurry that along. And statues have come down because of protests that probably would not have come down without them. So, you know, I think people mock protesting sometimes, but it does seem to work in certain cases. People don't want... there's something about a protest that people... I don't know... What do you think the driver is? Because if it's peaceful, and it's got to be peaceful,
well, one
that
of
drives people.
One of the things that we were actually, I was planning on talking about was the difference between violent and nonviolent protests, because that was something we talked about a little bit in class, and we wanted to kind of dig deep and figure out which one is really more effective. And obviously, I think that if you ask that question to people right off the bat, they're going to say nonviolent protests. But if you actually, like, take a step back and look at different protests throughout, I think both of them are effective in their own ways. I think it just depends on the situation. But I think the driver for protests is to make a difference, change something that's not right in the world.
But... violent protesting is extremely unpopular.
Yeah.
And it gives the group that is protesting a very bad name, even if they're protesting for something that may be right.
Yeah. So what I wanted to talk about with violent protests was going back to, like, LGBTQ, was Stonewall riots in 1969. And so basically a little backstory. Back in that time period, it was not normal and it was not accepted to be gay. And it was very popular for gay bars to be, like, raided by police and, like, people to be, like, detained just for being gay. But one night in 1969, I believe it was June 28th, in New York at Stonewall Inn, the gay bar, police had come and raided the bar, but this night was the night that the LGBTQ community had had enough, and it was actually, the riots were actually started by drag queens from this club. I listened to a podcast of people who had lived and partaked in these riots, and this story of how this guy said that it started was there were drag queens were being like detained by police and being like pulled out of the clubs, and there was this one queen who was politely asking this policeman to stop pushing her and stop like grabbing her, and obviously the police didn't stop. So this guy said that he saw her take off her heel and start beating the police officer with her high heel. And that's really when the riots broke out. And the riots that night went on until about 4 a.m. It was all night. And everybody was just, thousands of people were rioting and, like, fighting police. And even, like, a lot. Like, it was just, I can't even think about that, like, how angry they had to have been to take it to that extreme. I think that when you think about, like, violent protests, the thing that people think about is, like, oh, like, they're criminals, like, they're just, like, causing a scene. But to think about, like, how angry someone has to be in order to take it to violence, like, that just, like, amazes me.
But did that protest, in your opinion, get anything done? Now, we know it was violent, but did it do anything?
Well, those riots lasted, like, the whole weekend, pretty much. And from the podcast that I listened to, everyone that had partaked in the riots or even heard about it, they said that there was a shift after those riots where gay people weren't afraid to be gay anymore. More people were coming out as gay, and they were openly gay in public, and, like, there was a shift, like, they weren't afraid anymore, and these riots, like, gave them a sense of acceptance in a way, because even though it still wasn't really accepted, they felt like they were able to be who they were after this.
Well, it is interesting in a lot of ways, because one of those ways of protesting is protected under the Constitution. And it even specifically says peaceful protest. Non-peaceful is not.
Yeah.
You can go to jail for this.
Mm-hmm.
So, is it worth it to make that kind of impact? Could they have been peaceful and still achieved what they achieved?
I think that it depends on the situation. Like I said, they have all gone through, like, harassment and, like, everything for years. And it was just built up anger, which led to the violence. And I think that they could have made a difference if they were peaceful, but I think that it wouldn't have been as, like, rapid. It wouldn't have been as fast as it was.
But isn't that where we were with George Floyd this past year? There were a lot of very peaceful protests.
Mm-hmm.
The one in Marion, which happened.
Yeah.
I had not seen a protest in Marion forever.
Mm-mm.
There were, I don't think the protests in Columbus turned violent.
There were some. I know that, I don't think that they necessarily turned violent, but I know that Columbus was tear gassed a couple times.
Well, but there were places where they were very violent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, that ended up giving, I think that hurt what was going on, the violence, because what I kept hearing from people who probably did not support what they were doing anyway, but it gave those people a chance to say, oh, look at all these you know, it's okay to protest, but you're rioting. You're rioting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not okay to break other people's stuff, and it's not okay to do that. So people totally forgot about what was causing the protests. It became more about, you can't riot. You just can't do that.
Yeah, there's been protests for civil rights for a long time, and I think that what really hurt the protest this year was media and how quickly and how, like, available media is, because there were so many news stories and news stations only reporting on the violence and the looting and the riots that had come out of the protests from this year. But the thing is if you look at that compared to how many protests were peaceful, there were not very many protests that had turned violent. It was just a few people in the protest that made it violent. And also, there were so many videos like that I saw on Twitter that didn't get shown on the news, and it showed police instigating violence. And it showed them, like, just being so rude and mean to the protesters without them even doing anything, which instigated violence, which was what got reported on the news.
Well, we're getting somebody out there listening is sending us a message on social media about the protests or riots, however people refer to them. And this is the message we got. The problem now is groups of people partake in these riots just because they want to loot, and the sole purpose is to cause mayhem without caring about the cause. Break into Target and steal some blankets. See, and I think that's where, when it became a riot, which is different than a protest, people were able to say things like that. Mm-hmm. They were able to say, this is not about George Floyd. This is not about racism. This is not about police brutality. This is about riots. This is about people being destructive.
And see, I'm going to have to disagree with that statement, because I think the way I look at it, when protests become violent and angry, I don't think it's about just causing mayhem or just the simple fact that you want to loot. I think it's especially looking at the protests from this year, like about police brutality and racism, like these people that we will never relate because we are white, but people that have been discriminated against and have lived through this brutality and like all this racism and everything throughout the years, they have had so much anger and sadness, and they have put up with so much that we will never understand. And I think that sometimes they think that the only way to be heard is to be violent. Because a lot, like I said, peaceful protests were not reported on the news. It was only the violent ones. The way that a lot of people feel like the only way that they're going to be heard is if they make a scene.
But does it further their cause is the big
question. And that's the thing.
Question. Even though it's reported on the news,
yeah.
Is that good that it's reported on the news?
The thing about that is what you have to take in consideration is the fact that you can protest as long as you want and be peaceful about it, but nothing might be done about that because of being peaceful. Like, obviously things will change, but it'll be over a period of time. I think that when people protest semi-violently, that they expect rapid change. Like, the protests this year, it wasn't super rapid, but like how you said, like, people are being charged now, and like cases have been reopened. Like, people didn't stop talking about it. People didn't stop making it heard.
So, I guess in the end result, does it have to be violent to make a difference?
I personally don't think it needs to be violent, but I think that there comes to a point. Obviously, I'm not condoning violence. I'm not, like, saying violence is the answer. Like, I don't think violence is the answer, but I think that at some point, like, people get to the point where they feel that nothing else will work besides violence. And I think that the mindset that people had during these protests, that the people that made it violent, was they have been oppressed, their lives have been ruined, there's been so many things taken from them that they want to show how it feels to have things be taken from you and how it feels to have, like, your life ruined, basically.
The whole tenor of the 2.5 hours we're doing this morning is based upon changing the world. And in your generation, changing the world. And it's fascinating because I read a statistic back when these riots and protests were going on, and people thought the people that were protesting were of a certain group, but stories and statistics are what they are. But the one that jumped out at me most relevantly was that the biggest group protesting and the biggest group out there were Caucasian young people about this.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know if that's true, but I think that's interesting.
I think that is interesting, too, and I can see how that would be true, because I think that, like I said in the last hour, like, I think young people they're a lot more open-minded, and I think we care a lot more about everybody. So I think that the people that do agree with the protest this year, like, they want to show their support, even though, like, we don't understand and we never will understand what people of color have gone through in their lives. We want to show that we support them and that we are with them and that we want them to be equal no matter what.
Do you feel, because there were protests in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
there were Voting Rights Acts that were passed,
mm-hmm.
there were marches on Washington that went on, all having to do with race.
Mm-hmm.
There was the whole Rodney King incident in 92 that went on. Do you think we ever changed anything? And do you think there is a way to change anything?
I think that, like, talking about protests from the past, like, including, like, the Freedom Riders, which was another civil rights, like, protest, I think that these protests have changed things. I think, like, we definitely have come a long way considering, like, civil rights, because if you look back, like, in the 60s and 50s, like, there was, like, laws against black people. Like, cities were segregated. Like, black people couldn't go to the same schools. They couldn't use the same water fountains. They couldn't ride, like, in the same seats on the bus as white people. And if you look at it now, like, obviously, yes, there is still racism very prominent in the world. But I think, yes, it has gotten a lot better. And I don't know if there will ever be a point in time where it will be completely gone.
You know something that's never talked about, and this is completely just a little derivation from where we are, but the generation that grew up in the 60s and 70s, I mean, it was pretty much dubbed the Peace and Love Generation. This was Woodstock. This was protesting the Vietnam War. This was peace signs. This was bell bottoms and the whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
And long hair for the first time. I think the term hippie came out of that generation. And then, it's interesting, this is the 60s and 70s generation, and they were completely against what their parents were in the 40s and 50s, the mom who was in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
and wore the apron, and the dad who wore a suit to work every day and a tie. That wasn't going to be them. And then the 80s and the 90s came, and they became the parents. And 80s was considered the me generation. What happened to the hippies? What happened to the peaceful people? What happened to the peace and love generation? Where did they go? They're still here. They're becoming grandmothers now and grandfathers. Did they achieve anything that they protested and made movements on in the 60s and 70s, once they got it into being parents themselves?
I think, like, when you look back at, I think every generation wants to not be like their parents. And I think that is, like, a big thing that, like, right now especially, we want to make a change from what our parents have been doing, and they wanted to make a change from what their parents have been doing. I think that when you talk about, like, in the 70s and 80s, how, like, they didn't want to be like their parents, where, like, the mom stayed at home, I think, like, that, in terms of that, like, they did change that, because now, like, it is not even, like, if you see a woman working, it's not anything to question. Like, everybody is working, and I think in terms of, like, women came a long way, and I think it really started with that generation, because they started to question everything that had been going on in, like, the 40s.
But I guess I'm saying their big thing was they did not want to be materialistic. And I think they became more materialistic than their parents were in the mm-hmm. If you go back to the Depression generation, which were their parents, mm-hmm. they didn't spend money.
Yeah.
They did save money. They were afraid that they were going to be rationed again with rationing cards and could only get one pair of shoes a year. And so their parents were frugal. And their parents, even though they did wear ties to work and mom stayed at home, you know, if you, that the whole phrase about clean your plate, that was them, because they did not like waste.
Mm-hmm.
They did. So here comes the peace and love generation that says, we're rebelling against that. That's our parents, you know, ties and mom at home and that whole thing. But they became the generation that, did they achieve material? They became more materialistic. I gotta have the bigger car. I gotta have the salad shooter. I gotta have QVC. I've gotta have Amazon. I've gotta have the biggest new phone. I've gotta have. What happened?
I think that comes with the fact that when their parents were being so frugal, like, they really had a reason to be, because they had just lived through a depression. But I think the fact that, like, they didn't want to be like their parents, where they didn't want to like wear ties to work every day, and they women wanted to go out and work and not stay at home and cook. I think doing that, like, with women working and, like, there being so much more income in the house, they were able to spend more money, which in turn made them more materialistic than their parents.
But isn't that what their parents wanted? Isn't that why they were wearing the tie? So they could work in an office and they could afford for mom to stay home. And, you know, I mean, yes, she wore jewelry, but it was her choice. And I think she wore it because she could afford it. Mm-hmm. And her parents, who were the parents of the Depression, couldn't. They couldn't. They had to sell everything. People were jumping out of windows during the Depression. So I'm just not sure, because there are still people living who lived during the Depression. They're in their 80s and 90s mm-hmm. now. But they're still like that, in a way. They're still very frugal with what they do. But the hippie generation, the peace and love generation, they became as materialistic as everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because the depression
generation that is still with us, they never did become materialistic, really. I'm sure some of them did,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't. They were always the ones that were still, I can sew that. I can fix that hole. You know, they were the generation that sewed holes in socks. You're not going to find that in the last couple of generations.
Mm-mm. No. I don't know. That's, like, an interesting thing to think about. I think the people that are still, like, very frugal that did live through the Depression, I think the fact that they did live through the Depression really plays a role in that, because they know really what it's like to have to sew a hole in your sock. You can't get a new one. So I think the fact that they had to go through that, they still have that in the back of their mind, like, I don't know.
I guess just the button on this is, and it's, I guess it's yes or no in the end, but did the hippie generation, which they maybe ended up being more materialistic than their parents were, which mm-hmm. was the exact opposite of what was supposed to happen, but what was that movement all about? What did it end up being about? Okay, so they didn't wear a tie to work anymore. But they ended up, you know, they were the generation that moved to the suburbs. They were the generation that said, I've got to send my kid to the best school. My kid's got to have the best tennis shoes. So did they end up becoming what they sought out to be?
I mean, when you look at it that way, not really. I don't know. I think what happened with they tried to be, like, so caring and so, like, peace and love, like you were saying, but I think that I don't really know where it went wrong and, like, what really happened, but people have become extremely selfish. People tend to really just think about them and, like, what they want and what they have, and they want the best of everything. And I couldn't tell you, like, what happened or where that started, but that's really what people have come to, and I think that that's probably what happened to them.
So in the end result, which is where we are with this, your generation, when it comes to protesting, is this a generation that's going to protest more? Are they going to continue the activism into their lives as parents and older people?
I really hope so, but I think that the difference here is that we're not just, like, trying to not wear a tie to work or trying to not be, like, frugal like our parents. Like, we're trying to, like, make sure, like, human lives are equal to other human lives. Like, we want change for individuals and not for, like, I don't know, like, material things, I guess.
It's an interesting subject because protests have happened all throughout time. We act like these George Floyd protests were a new thing, but they've happened.
Mm-mm.
They've happened for a long time. Back to the Edmund Pettus Bridge, they were happening. So it's interesting. Now, what's the next topic on the agenda?
Well, I'm pretty much just still talking about protests. I wanted to talk about, like, how we were talking about protests from before and how it has led to today. Like, I mentioned the Freedom Riders before, but I really wanted to touch base on that still because that was a peaceful protest. The Freedom Riders were peaceful through their whole time, which lasted from May until December of 1961. But I want to talk about how those protests turned violent, but I want to talk about how it was not the protesters that made it violent. I watched, a documentary, really, about the Freedom Riders, and what backstory on the Freedom Riders, it was a civil rights movement where people of all genders, all races, all ages took part in it, but it was mostly for people of color. They rode buses into segregated southern cities, and their goal was to end segregation in southern cities pretty much, but, like, everywhere. But they rode them into, like, the major cities, and there was this one story of a bus that made it to Alabama, I'm sure. I think it was Alabama. And as soon as they got there, there were people waiting for their bus to get there. And the people were angry that they were riding their bus there. And what ended up happening was the bus ended up getting lit on fire with the Freedom Riders still inside. And they all had to pile out. And when they piled out, the people that lit the bus on fire were waiting for them and started beating them and started, like, just being ruthless. And police just sat back and watched. And I think looking at that type of protest towards the type of protest today, I think there are similarities and differences for sure. Obviously, the protests today were not trying to end segregation. We're trying to, people are still being killed, and that is really what fueled the protests today. But I think that, the main goal is to just make sure that people are not going unpunished for killing the black people, because murder is a crime even if you're a police officer. But I think that when you look back at both of the protests, there are very similarities, because police back then weren't doing anything about these black people in Alabama getting beat on their bus.
Do you think this is different, though? Because here's the thing. Clearly, if we go back to the 1960s, mm-hmm. there were parts of this country that were completely segregated. Different schools. If you were a certain color, you could not go to this college.
Yeah.
Certain places, if you tried to register to vote, they would try to give you a test that they knew mm-hmm. you could not pass. Okay. For the most part, we can never
say... It's definitely different.
It's different. So, I look at the people... who were doing, like, back with the Freedom Riders. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, those police officers who were doing that, probably, if you would look at it in a general way, would probably have been considered a racist group.
Yeah.
Is that really what the police officers are doing today?
I'm not saying that, like, the police is a racist group. I'm saying that definitely there are police officers that are racist. Everybody can be racist. Like, it's not just saying police officers, but I'm saying that the similarities is that when there are police officers who do racist things, there isn't much being done about it.
Okay, that's the big question. Does doing something that's considered to be a racist thing make you a racist?
I think people can say they're not racist, and that can be true, but I think the difference between not being racist and not being okay with racism are very different.
Well, I think back to the George Floyd thing. Now, I think most people label that as a racist event, that would not have happened had George Floyd not been black.
Mm-hmm.
That's what seemed to be the consensus of that. But were the cops who did what they did they do it because he was a person of color? How do we know? I mean, maybe they did. I don't know. I don't know either way. I'm not sure.
We obviously don't 100% know if the cops who did what they did it because they are racist. But what really fueled it is, like, if you look at the numbers, yes, more white people are, like, getting detained by cops and everything. But if you look at the populations between white and black people in America, the ratio between white people and black people getting killed by police or getting, like, harmed by police is a lot higher for black people. And if you also look at different stories, a lot of times black people will get, like, more of a punishment for the same crime or even less of a crime than what a white person did.
So what do you think, why?
I think it's a stigma, and I think that there's, like, underlying racism from the past, and I think that the people that have grown up with racism, even if they're not racist, they still have those ideas because they grew up with them. And so I think that there's a lot of, like, stereotypes, and a lot of people, like, think, oh, like, black people are criminals, because most of the time when there's a crime, like, reported on the TV or something, like, there's a lot of times where you see it's a black person. And so I think that stigma comes, and a lot of people just automatically, like, assume and have that stereotype, which I think is something that plays a part in the racism and, like, the police, not necessarily, like, police being racist, but, like, that sort of situation.
So how does this change?
See, that is one of the things that, again, this is a wicked problem. A sticky wicket, is that what you said?
Sticky wicket, yeah.
But I think what needs to start is, I think that there needs to be more education for like my generation and the next generation. And I think that we need to try to end the stereotypes, because the fact is, just because you're black, you're not a criminal. There are so many, like, white criminals, there's so many, like, Asian criminals. Like, just because you're black does not mean you're a criminal. And a lot of people seem to think that, even if they're not racist, but there's a lot of stereotypes that people will, like, assume. And so I think the best way to do it is to talk about it. And if you, like, even now, like, if you're not even, like, not even in terms of education, but, like, if you're having a conversation with someone and they say something that could be racist, even just, like, calling them out and being like, hey, I'm not sure if you meant that, but that could be taken as, like, in a racist way. And I think that the thing to do is just talk about it. And people aren't really comfortable with having conversations about racism or topics of that matter. So I think what we need to do is make it one of those things where it's normal to have conversations about it.
Do you think that people know when there's, because I would think that if you went into a room and said something that could be interpreted as racist, that would not have been your intention. Do you think people know when they're saying those things? So if you were to confront them, do you think they would get what they had done?
I think there are definitely people that don't understand that some things that you say or do could be racist, because they don't understand what it's like to be black or a different minority race. I think that a lot of times when you call people out for stuff like that, they get defensive because it's not their intent, but they don't understand how it could be racist when they don't mean it in the way that some people could take it. But I think that what the problem is that they're not open enough to understand how it could be taken.
So how do they get there? I mean, do you think just lecturing them on what they did is going to work that?
No.
Is going to change that?
No. And I don't really know a way that will actually change it. I just think that a way to start is to just continue to talk about it and not let it die down. I just think that people need to know and people need to understand. Even if they don't want to understand, I think eventually either people will understand or they'll get the point.
And how long is this going to take? I heard somebody say one time that to totally eradicate racism, there will have to be a whole generation live and die that never lived in a time when schools were segregated, when the Voting Rights Act did not exist, when that wasn't happening. Mm-hmm. This is the 1960s. A lot of people are still alive. When you didn't see Martin Luther King Jr. assassinated, when you didn't see Malcolm X assassinated, when you didn't see the Watts riots in California in the 60s, that a whole generation will have to pass that never lived in that world will have to happen for racism to get any better.
And the thing is like, even if the whole generation has lived in past that didn't experience any of that, there's still people being taught to be racist. And that's the thing, is no one is born racist. It's what you grow up with and what your parents and grandparents tell you and what the people around you tell you. Like, there are many people in my generation that are racist that I do know. And there are many people that I do know in my generation that are the complete opposite. And I think it just depends on where you grow up, what you're around, what you're taught.
Well, Taylor Myers is the guest here. Now, you're going to come back for... How long are you going to be here with us this morning?
Not a whole too lot longer, because I do have class.
You do have class. But we are going to finish the conversation on the other side of this 15-minute break. And lots more here this morning on WWGH Radio. Don't go anywhere.
Little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke of it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that laughed like a bull's belly. He was chubby.